är Mikael. Jag föreslår att du lyssnar på en podcast som handlar om fri programvara. Den presenteras av Kevin och Gordon på den ädlaste engelska, den med skotsk accent. Podcasten heter Krivins.
Krivins, brought to you by Unseen Studio. We don't do DRM. Hello and welcome to Season 10, Episode 1 of Krivins, otherwise known as Episode 10 of Krivins. And a common mistake to make with a lot of podcasts these days, they're all going with their seasons. But anyway, we're on Episode 10, and as usual, this is actually a more regular episode. It's myself and Kevy again.
Hello, hello, and how are we doing out there tonight, Gordon?
Yeah, I'm all right. I've had interesting Wi-Fi stories that they won't bother people about. So we're going to start off on the usual sort of news and then a discussion thing. So the first story was something that I saw last week. I think it was last week. And I just thought this was brilliant. It's a brilliant idea. It's someone has made a version of Tron, a little game Tron, that's made entirely in JavaScript. It's something like 200 and something K. It's tiny and it's genius. It's just brilliant. I found it rather hard because I'm not used to keyboard controls, and it's quite fast as well for the small screen, but I just think this is genius. And they did a version of Tetris before that and early in JavaScript as well. So yeah, I just thought I'd mention that to start with.
Yeah, it's a nice wee topic to start with, actually. I did notice this on Identica. People were talking about it, but I kind of logged in and they were halfway through it, and I'm seeing all this, 200 bytes and 140 bytes. I'm going, what the heck are we talking about? I actually thought it was a talk about retro gaming. So to be honest, I didn't realize it was actually talking about tiny games that are out just now. So you actually went and tried them, though, didn't you? I haven't tried them yet.
Yeah, I tried Tetris, and the way they've done it, unless I've just not didn't play it long enough, it's all pound symbols or hash symbols. That's what's falling down as the blocks, and you get a single block on its own, or the two blocks, just two side by side. But you can't seem to. There's no other advanced shapes, or none that I noticed, for like L shapes and things. So it's not really that time consuming. You can't put them round or something. So it's. It's not great, but the Tron one is actually quite impressive. The black screen with a white line that moves rather fast, considering the size of the screen you've got to play with, and you die if you hit the edge. But yeah, the idea for what they did was they said they had a wee sort of competition, or sort of, I suppose it'd be a competition, to see who could create a game in the least lines of code. And I just thought that was genius for what they managed to do with that little,
Yeah, excellent. Look, I'll need to have a wee look at that. Hopefully it'll be good to see if they actually have more of these released, because it is amazing to see what people can actually do with just such a little amount of code. It's utterly brilliant. The one thing I'm assuming with Tetris is the old tune we love so much. Now, I'm assuming they had that down to a T, yes?
Yeah. there's no audio at all. And any of these, either that or the audio did not come through for me, but no, there's no audio. It's just a little bit of code. Yeah, it's good. I mean, it does show you what is. Yeah, actually, you could see yourself spending a bit of time in the Tron one just to pass some time. Tetris is more of an experiment, but Tron really is worth checking out. And we'll put the link in the show notes, and you'll find a link to Tetris and that there as well. Chances are they'll probably do others, just stuff that's quite kind of cool, but yeah, it's cool.
Oh yes, always nice to have a wee bit of pastime, and I must admit, I'm one of these guys that, see if anybody ever says Identica, I've written a new game for the Android phone, but it's not on the market yet. Does anyone want to try it? I'm like, yeah, me. So I've got a bunch of these half-finished games on my phones. They are good. I like them just to try. It's just something different. Oh, and on to our next wee bit here, and this one's regarding Wi-Fi. Now, I don't think you can get too many hardcore, just regarding, or should I say, open source unfriendly than Texas, the state of Texas in the USA. They seem to not be too keen to take up the Linux cause. And a while ago, they were trying to have a real campaign to more or less tell people it was going to be illegal to have open Wi-Fi, and if they were unprotected, then, you know, they were breaking the law, blah, blah. They were just scaremongering. There was no law. It was just utter nonsense. And after a group kind of set up saying, this is no law, trying to make it a bit more public, they suddenly realized, oh, we're backing down. However, on one of the news articles we've got today, the Australian police don't seem to have learned from their mistakes, and they are doing the same thing. So the official announcement is, Detective Superintendent Brian Hayes said police have identified a large number of homes and businesses within the Great Brisbane area with wireless connections that are not secure or have limited protection. These people may as well put their bank account details, passwords, and personal details on a billboard at the side of the highway. Now, this is just utter nonsense. Personally, I do have my network password protected, but to go to that extreme just to scaremonger is utter nonsense.
Struth, this is basically a copyright thing. It's the authorities, through lobbying by the RIAA and MPAA and all that, they basically want to avoid any possible loophole that, at the moment, if you've got an open Wi-Fi and you get some copyright infringement notice and you say, well, look, my Wi-Fi is open, it could have been anyone. They don't like that little loophole. That's why they're determined to get people to effectively make it a sort of social taboo to have your Wi-Fi open. And then the step further to that is actually make it illegal. So that's an offence in its own right. That means that anything that happens on that connection, they've got someone to go and slap the handcuffs on. That's what it's about. That's a hard sell to say, oh, it's for copyright infringement, it's for the multi-billionaires in Hollywood that want this to happen, especially since Hollywood, I mean, my geography is not that great, but as far as I was aware, Hollywood's not in Australia. I could be wrong, but it's not in Australia, it's in America. So they're using all sorts of scare tactics to try and get people to do that. The thing is, though, as much as they are scare tactics, there is also an element of public service to this. A lot of computer users, especially home computer users, they are technically clueless. I mean, they know how to use Word, and they know how to use Facebook and things like that, but they're technically clueless. I mean, how many times have you heard of people who install like a peer-to-peer program, and then they don't realize they're sharing their entire PC? Rather than just one folder, because they don't know any better. And that's how you find things like blueprints for military helicopters, because some contractors installed a peer-to-peer program and shared the whole fucking hard drive. So it's things like that, and people don't necessarily realise just how open their networks are and how open their security is. So, I mean, they could do it in a different way. They could actually go through the educating route rather than the scaremongering route, but the scaremongering route is all about copyright infringement in big Hollywood.
Yes, and I personally don't think there's a problem with trying to encourage people to have wireless passwords, but like you said, there's a right way to do it and there's a wrong way, and I think this whole way about it is, it's just bullying tactics. And you know, it's we've come back to this a few times, but It's like that quote from Star Wars, you know, the more you tighten your grip, the more star systems fall through. And the more, it becomes a point of principle after a while. The more people say, you must do this, then, you know, something that could be a perfectly reasonable request, you're going to get people saying, well, wait a minute, it's my freedom, I'm going to choose. So just because of the way you're looking at this, I'm going to say no. Which at the end of the day could actually be, in theory, that the person who's doing that, who's just consciously saying no to this, could actually be creating themselves a bit of a security problem. Not as far as, okay, they're not going to be prosecuted, but it may well be everything that could be on their system could be got to by a decent hacker.
So the other thing they're trying to clamp down on as well is that cafes and pubs and things like that, anywhere that offers free Wi-Fi as an incentive to draw people in and spend time having a coffee and a burger and stuff like that, And they're trying to clamp down on that for the same reasons, because of basically copyright infringement. They're basically saying that they need to be able to track everyone who uses that network and what they download. And it's hard to monitor someone if they can just join up anonymously and then disappear again.
Yeah, this is not happening in the UK recently. This is not going to set a precedent, because they tried to arrest or to try to charge a guy who owned a pub about downloaded copyright. And it actually went quite far, but then they said, well, wait a minute, this is an open network. Anybody could have done this. You can't blame the guy who owns the pub. Didn't this not kind of raise a big spark of all this talk?
Yeah, these issues resonate all around the world. You know, it's like little sparks that appear in different countries and different examples. And you're right, that was one of them, the pub owner who was targeted for that. It's a joke, basically, it's a joke.
And from one walk of life, from publicans to truck drivers next. Now, I want you to have a think, and I'm talking to all our listeners here. The next time you download something illegally, you downloaded copyright material, you are putting the poor truck drivers out of a job. Oh, it makes me sad. It's just depressing me.
Yeah, this was a brilliant headline from TechDot. Wanted, the truck driver who lost his job due to file sharing. And that just caught my eye. It's like, what the hell? And basically, it's the AAs again, Alcoholics Anonymous, no, sorry, hang on. The Recording Industry Arseholes of America and the Music and Motion Picture Arseholes of America. One of their, I think it was the MPAA, they're not sort of known for dealing with reality. And the guy went on some show in America, some TV show, and they tried to spin it as it's the average person. The industry is not just the big megastars at the top, the big earning megastars. It's a whole, you know, flotilla of different people who have jobs in the industry. And they tried to liken themselves to protecting the interests of the till assistants who sell you popcorn at the fucking cinema. Not sure quite where they get royalties for movies from. They don't even pay the fucking actors royalties, let alone people who serve popcorn at the theatre. In this case, it mentioned a truck driver who delivers like the goods, CDs and DVDs and that type of thing to the stores, losing his job due to piracy. That was the latest hook on this. I mean, they try these hooks all the time. And TechDot was basically saying, look, we want to find this guy. Or this person, should I say. We want to find this person and talk to them. We wanted, who is this person? Get them to get in touch. We want to talk to them. So if you know of this truck driver who have lost their job due to file sharing that's been referred to, please get in touch with TechDot. They would love to contact them.
Yeah, it's now that my last Kleenex is used up, and you know, and I now realise that this fictitious driver doesn't actually exist. I feel a lot better now. Yeah, this is utter nonsense, though. I mean, they're really taking the moral ground just by saying, of course, well, you know, if you do this, then it's not, you know, Tom Cruise or anybody else who is way up there. You're affecting your own people. You know, I mean, they're basically saying, you know, your granny is going to suffer because you downloaded that new album and you did not buy it from the shop. Yeah, it's an utter nonsense. I mean, really, this reminds me of, do you remember a while ago they were trying to say that if you bought DVDs from the, well, as we well know at the kind of local markets, the Barras, if you bought them from then, of course, that, you know, you were immediately funding major terrorist organizations. I actually, going being in the Barras, that probably isn't too far wrong, but for quite a few, they were talking about, yes, you're funding this and you're funding that. And then they did that absolutely awful knockoff Nigel advertising campaign. I mean, that was laughable. That actually made me want to go out and download copyrighted stuff. It was just awful. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, for anyone who is ever thinking of visiting Scotland for a holiday or something, you've got to go to the Barras in Glasgow. Make a day out at the weekend, one weekend, to go to the Barras. It's a fantastic place. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. It's a huge flea market. And the banter is brilliant. It's brilliant. I've been there a few times, and yeah, a thoroughly enjoyable day out. But yeah, there is a lot of stalls. You can never remember where the bar is because you go there one time, and then a week later, half the stall owners have changed, and it's different people, which could explain the illegal nature of a lot of the stuff they're selling and getting busted and things like that. But yeah, they are a joke. I mean, it's the usual OTT scare stories because they don't really have a solidly legitimate thing from the consumer's point of view. They don't have the moral high ground, so they have to try and do something else to get their message across. And that's why they usually link it to anything from all the buzzwords of the day. Terrorism, you know, human trafficking, gun running, you know, drug smuggling, you know, anything that any bullshit that you're likely to believe, essentially, is what they'll try to link it to. And they just go over the top. I mean, it's the same with when they try to do stuff to, quote, educate, unquote, you against drugs. You've got reefer madness. One talk of a joint and you suddenly go mad and kill everybody. No, it doesn't happen. This is the problem. When they go so over the top, it becomes a joke. And the people who are doing it already or who have tried it, they know it's complete bollocks. And it's so far removed from reality that it's a joke. Basically, it's a joke. If they played it a lot more closer to reality, then they might get people buying it, but they don't, because they don't really have the moral case to be able to do that and sell it.
Just going back to the virus part, I would like to say, any listeners, yeah, do not go down weekdays. It's not open, and it's not really the type of area you'd want to visit unless the market was on, and get down there early for, of course, the best bargains. So I'm not exaggerating. If you go kind of 1 o'clock after lunch, forget it. Most of the places have been closed down by then, so you want to get there as early as you can. Right then, now from one bit of moral high ground to one part where they're definitely not going to be taking the moral high ground, where of course Microsoft are up to their old tricks again, and they're ensuring that the European Parliament does not accept or does not adopt open source software or open source solutions, because they have started to hand out free licenses for Microsoft programs. Now, the FSFE, that's a free software foundation for Europe, that is, they have been urging the members of the European Parliament not to accept these, basically because Microsoft just does not want to lose out in the customs, and it's even just going to be to the case of, right, we'll hand you out free licensing, blah, 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 because they know fine well that it is going to be effort, it is going to cost money, although it's not going to cost anything for the software, it is costing money to get all this new system put out. New programs obviously need training. So Microsoft, they're doing their usual tactics. They will try absolutely anything to make sure open source does not get into any form of public computing or where any gets any form of publicity. It just does not want it to happen at all.
Yeah, it's mind share. It's about what you know as well. So if they've got governments and institutions, I mean, whatever government uses, that essentially leads what businesses use, because they need to interact with government. I mean, imagine the UK government decided that, right, we're going to use open document format for document files now, and, you know, we're going to use a proper standard. That would force Microsoft to, first of all, it would force them to send in the shills and send them to do exactly what we're talking about here, is give away free licenses and say, no, you can't have that. And, you know, the whole poison campaign saying, oh, open source is insecure and blah, blah, blah. And if that failed, it would force them to add in the ability in Microsoft Office to support ODF, which they really don't want to do, because they want people to use their own standards, and it's all about walk-in, basically. If there's a bridgehead opened up with stuff like LibreOffice or even Linux or BSD, but especially like LibreOffice, it's about what people know. They use at home often what they use at work. So if people get used to that at work, LibreOffice, and they say, oh, it's free at work, I can get the exact same thing at home and it doesn't cost a bean. I mean, the chances are they'll install on Windows, but that's not the point. And that digs away at the whole mindset of you've got to have Microsoft Office to do proper Office stuff. If you're finding that at work, at government level, that you don't need that, then it starts to corrode the actual, all the lock-in, and the whole deck of cards is vulnerable.
Yeah. Do you ever listen to the podcast, The Open Tech Exchange, with Darlene and Mark?
I've heard Darlene and Mark doing a few episodes on Hacker Public Radio, but I've not actually heard their show on their own, no.
Well, they were talking about this this exact thing, and now, this is what I want to be very careful here, right? Please, Microsoft lawyers, I am going to hear, if you're listening, right, this is not a case for legal issues, but I'm only repeating here. What they've actually been talking about was that in Africa especially, because there's an awful lot of corruption in government anyway throughout the whole continent, then any time any country, pick a country in Africa, any time the government pissy, right, we're going with open solutions. Darlene and Mark had said, you know, it was actually scary. Immediately, Microsoft would back whoever was the rival. Now, it didn't seem to matter to them what exactly they were, what exactly they stood for. I mean, literally, the rival could be saying, right, we stand for cannibalism, you know, we're the cannibal party. It didn't seem to matter. They were just literally saying, right, there you go. If you say now that you are going to use Microsoft products and only Microsoft products when you get into office, we'll fund your campaign completely. That was actually a really scary show to listen to, that one episode, to think just, I mean, okay, this is obviously reported, but to think that they go to that extreme just to kind of keep their product in the spotlight, to me, there's a worrying lack of morality there. I mean, where do you stop?
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft didn't get where they are today by making a good product. And they didn't get where they are today by having some sort of fair competition side by side with other products and managing to be the better one or the better value. They got there because of abuses like this. So it's no surprise. I mean, it's not so much Microsoft is up to its old tricks again. It's just a case of Microsoft have never stopped doing these tricks. They're past masters of that. They're well entrenched, and they do it all over the world. They've got whole departments for this all over the world to ensure the monopoly continues against the never-ending march of open and transparency and standard and things like that. Yeah, I mean, it's no surprise, really. This is nothing new for Microsoft.
No, not at all, but it's kind of worrying, just the fact of the levels they'll go to. I mean, but of course, you couldn't even, I can't imagine that there would even ever be a proper report on this by a proper news story, because no doubt they'll be in the back pocket and then they'll be there trying to discredit the reporter or even the channel. So that isn't going to happen. Now, one of the things that has become quite a hot potato really of recently is bubbling and tracking. One of the companies that who have been trying to make it a wee bit easier to set, I mean, you can set, anybody can set the preferences on their browser with a wee bit of tinkering to do not track. However, Mozilla in general, if you go into their preferences, it's quite obvious. Some of the other browsers, it's not. But Mozilla have been working for this for their new mobile operating system, which is just in the general system-wide preferences of do not track. Now, there's only one thing that does concern me about this. You can tell and set your browser to do not track. So in other words, it does not get your cookies, sites you visit don't get your cookies, etc., which means they shouldn't be passed on to different companies, which, you know, should mean less spam and blah, blah, blah. Right. Unfortunately, that doesn't work. It doesn't actually stop the cookies being sent out. It's everything's still there. But if you've got do not track, then the recommendation is that if you've got it set for that, that the company does not pass on or does not use or in fact just deletes the information it holds on you. Now, there's a bit of a worrying thing here, because I've got to be honest, companies who do this make money off it. Why, if it's not legislation, would they even want to not pass this on?
That is the thing with the internet as services, as sites that are free at the point of use, which the vast majority of the internet is. Usually, more often than not, the price to use it free of charge is the fact that you're stuff, you're being tracked and you're being profiled, and there's advertising and all that. So that's usually the price you pay for that, to actually use the services. And, you know, I mean, could you imagine Facebook or Google of that not tracking? It's just not going to happen, because that's primarily where they get their fuel from, is from users' data. So you're right. I mean, if there's no legislation to force that, even if there is legislation to force that, I doubt any of the companies would actually do it. They would do it in PR terms. They would go through some process to do it if they were forced to, and then it would be buggy. It wouldn't quite work right. There would be ways round about it to say that, yes, we're not tracking here, but we've managed to do it this way, and just get around the legislation. It's what all criminals do, is they'll find ways around the laws to keep doing what they want to do and that they profit from, while staying on the letter of the law. It's a good idea, but the fact that the vast majority of the web is funded by this type of stuff, I don't think you're going to get any buy-in at all from companies. You'll get some ethical ones who would do it because they believe in privacy and stuff like that if people opt out. But, you know, the vast majority will say, hey, fuck that, we'll do what we want. It's sort of like any kind of self-regulation. When there's an outcry building up over some industry's actions about doing something, when it gets to the point that politicians are involved and start questioning the companies and the individuals involved, and they start laying down hints about what they could do, usually the first thing that comes out of the company's mouth is, oh, self-regulation. We'll put in these recommendations, and that's, you don't need to bother setting down laws. We'll self-regulate, knowing all the while that the suggestions they make are only a fraction of what's needed, and they've no intention of going through with them anyway. That's just what it seems to me, is just another sort of version of that. As you're right, I mean, very few companies are going to opt into it, which means it's kind of pointless. The only option you've got is to try and manually do it by disabling third-party cookies and having to go through the various hoops to protect yourself, because no one's going to protect you for you.
No, definitely not. And to be honest, if you're a half-savvy techie user, then it's not really that difficult to do. But it's people, I feel sorry for people who, you know, maybe those intermediate users who, you know, they know how they're going to edit and preferences, blah, blah, and they probably honestly believe they're actually disabling it by having this do not track. But it's just one of those things. I mean, Google and Facebook, how much do they charge you for using their services? Monetarily, nothing. It's not a paid for service. They make their money, and they didn't become two of the biggest computer companies by doing things ethically and having absolutely no advertising, blah, blah, right? They are monitoring you ever so closely. It doesn't take much for you to see every time you put in a search saying, we recommend this for you. You know, it's the same with Facebook. I remember when I used to actually have a Facebook profile, I would get constant adverts for Linux system administrators, blah, blah, this. And I was like, oh, this is just getting too annoying. But anyway, I think we've probably finished up on this section. That's just actually good timing. We've just come up to the half hour, and we are going to play a bit of, get you started with a bit of rock here. And this is Amity and Fame, who are a great band. If you haven't checked them out, go check them out. Their first album's on Jamendo, and it's called Dinner for One. Their second album's available on their website. It's called Through. I have both of those. They're brilliant. And this track is Newborn Son. Enjoy.
Son is here, best I've ever seen a child. Bring me some.
Back. And even the non-techie users, especially in the UK over this last couple of weeks, would have struggled to not notice in the news that a certain franchise that has become quite a regular place on the UK high street has actually gone into liquidation. And this is the store Game. Now, actually, I didn't know this, but Game is also owned also owns the company I thought was its rival as GameStation. So they're actually one and the same. So now, this does obviously mean there's a lot of potential redundancies. They haven't closed all their stores yet. They did actually close some very quickly, but they haven't closed them all yet. But this will leave, obviously, in a bad climate, a lot of people out of work. But that's not really the angle we're going to look at. We want to actually just discuss tonight how, in fact, Game met its end. So do you want to start off with that?
I've not been a gamer for a while, but when I was, yeah, Game was one of the regular places you could go and look and see new releases and sometimes buy stuff. But Game had a lot of issues, and it seems to be quite a common experience from people all over the country in game stores, where you go in and they've got a policy of basically pouncing on people and trying to sell you stuff. And Game, I mean, that irritates me no end in at any store, regardless of what it is. My policy is, if I want help, I'll ask for it, and I don't want someone to sort of pounce on it on me as soon as I come in the door. But game always do that. They've got to do it. It's part of their staff policy. So, I mean, the thing is with gamers is, chances are most people who go in to these to buy games know what kind of stuff they like. They are the people that are going to be experiencing it, and they are the people who are going to be playing the games, and they are the people who are going to have either played the game at their mate's house, or they've played demos of it, or they've seen reviews, and they basically know what type of thing they're looking for. They know what type of, I mean, for a while, THC were absolutely awful. Anything they had was terrible, terrible games. And people know what they want. They don't need anyone to help sell them stuff. But game never quite grasped that concept.
Yeah, I was back in my Windows days, I was a big user of games as well. I mean, obviously one of the things that it's a bit disappointing with Linux, really the game scene hasn't caught up. Well, it's getting a lot better, I must admit, especially in the last year and a bit that it was. But I remember going into game once since I became a Linux user. And, you know, I mean, talk about the, you know, customers are always right. Gee, was not on their policy this day. Because I just thought, well, I wonder if they do actually have any. Maybe I didn't expect there to be a full section of Linux games. I'm being realistic. But I thought, well, they are a game store. Let's see if they've got any native Linux games at all. Just to see, I mean, they might have the odd one or two. And I thought, well, if they do, even if they're crap games, I'll buy them just purely to show, you know, to show a bit of support for them. And I went in and I asked, I says, do you have any games that are native for Linux? The first guy asked on the till said, what's Linux? What's that? Is it a new console? And I'm like, oh my word. And the other guy, his reaction was, I couldn't honestly, what he said was, why would we? Linux is a pile of crap. Well, needless to say, I never went into a game since then. So this doesn't make me sad to see game disappearing. At least one of the things I have found with local game stores, you know, not so much the game chain, but localized ones, they will actually at least accommodate you, and a lot of them will say, well, we can try and get some in if you can tell us a couple of suppliers or makers. But I could not believe how rude that guy was. So that was my last experience of game.
Yeah, it's not just the condescension and the pouncing on people as well that doesn't work. It's the whole value for money. I routinely found that game were rather expensive for the games, unless it was like the grade A, the brand new releases, where they had no choice but to compete. Otherwise, people would go on the week of a new release. If they didn't compete in price, people would go to other stores and buy them. So they had no choice. But other than that, no, they were on the expensive side. And then they did like pre-owned games as well, which a lot of people now are, because instead of paying like $45, $50 for a game, I think it's come down a little bit now, but instead of doing that, they're willing to wait 3 or 4 months and then either get it pre-owned or something at half the price. But even that, when you trade in a game there, they'll give you peanuts for it. And then when they put their pre-owned sticker on it, they put a huge markup on it. So that it's only like $2 or $3 cheaper than the brand new one. So there's a huge markup there on stuff that they do. They're condescending. They jump on people as soon as they come in the door. All in all, it's a whole recipe for a failing. It's a way not to run a business, basically, is what games seem to be concentrating on. And I think what they were going for is, I mean, as you said, you were kind of surprised that they owned what you thought was their rival as well. I thought they did, but I wasn't too sure. When they go and buy rival chains so that they are the only game in the village, basically, and they are the only game in a shopping centre in a town, I think the logic is, we're a monopoly. If we get a monopoly, that customers will have no choice but to come to us and put up with our bullshit. Put up with us pouncing on them when they come in the door, put up with our condescending attitude, and put up with our high prices. The problem is they are not a monopoly. They may be a monopoly as far as independent game stores are concerned, but they're not a monopoly on where people get their games.
No, definitely not. And the other thing that was interesting was to read when you're talking about, this was 3 years ago, they were recommended, that group was set up, because obviously game have been struggling for a while, it's not just for just now. They were recommended that in the future, in the next few years, that you'd see a tipping over from people buying physical games, like in the box and off the shelves, to digital downloads. And they were actually recommended that they should produce this, and they should produce actually a download store. And it is also, as well, I'm just reading this here, for using the game brand to power digital storefronts on the PCs, consoles, and other platforms. So in other words, you know, you could maybe get, you know, your game app on the Android phone, the iPhone, or on the PC, something similar to Steam or Desura. But it seems those have been totally ignored. And in fact, it said the CEO at the time, what was her name, Lisa Morgan, she actually said that this was completely unnecessary, these steps. Now, I mean, for some people that are in the technology game, okay, it's gaming, right? But I cannot believe somebody could actually be that blind to say, no, no, what we're doing, we're going to continue on with, because it's quite obvious. People are buying less and less physical games. I mean, all you've got to do is have a wee look at the console industry. People are buying less and less, and when people are buying games, this drives me bananas for one, the games are getting shorter and shorter, but they're more concerned with getting played over Xbox Live or whatever the PlayStation equivalent of that is, the PS3 equivalent of that. It's more online gaming. It's not as much a physical thing. It's paying for your download, getting it there and then. It's not so much going and getting the box.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when I was a gamer, I mean, I'm talking about the sort of the early days of the PS2, and that was at a time where console gaming over a network was, it was a rare thing. You could buy a modem for the PS2, but it was expensive, and it wasn't really, it was an add-on. And the Xbox, I'm not sure if the original Xbox had it, I can't remember. The whole network thing was the exclusive domain, pretty almost exclusive, of the Windows PC platform, and console gamers hadn't went down that way. And even as far as delivering games, buying the games is concerned, you couldn't really buy them as a download. You would buy them because they were so big, and because broadband wasn't as, it was expensive and it wasn't as widespread for regular consumers. Actually buying a game that would take like 2 or 3 gig was just not an option, a feasible option, and people were happy to buy the discs. The problem this goes to not just gaming, but all sorts of creative niches as well, is if you get the grade A titles, the top titles as they come out, you're being hammered by the supermarkets who buy them in and buy the top 10 or top 20 games, top 20 books, DVDs, Blu-rays, whatever it is, the stuff that's charting, the stuff that's being pushed really heavily and expected to sell by the bucket load in the weeks and months that it comes out, they are buying them in so much bulk that they're undercutting the value. So if you go to something, if a new game comes out, you may be able to try it and play it in game to have a quick game of it to see what it's like, but it may be 10 quid more expensive there than saying, right, that's fine, I know what it's like now, I'll go to Tesco and buy it, or I'll go to Safeway and buy it. So they've been undercut by there. As far as the regular games are concerned, the only niche they've got then becomes the more obscure stuff, the stuff that's not being, the back catalogues, because the supermarkets buy in bulk and expect to sell it through in bulk. And as soon as it tips below a certain sales point, as soon as it goes out of the charts, they send them all back and you can't buy them there. The only place you've got is the independent places like Game. So that was the physical thing that we've been undercut on. And then even that, as you said, for someone who was in charge of a company and presumably very well paid for that role, and presumably taking out loads of millions of pounds in bonuses for doing such a bang up job, to not see that the future was online, that is fucking criminal. As far as shareholders are concerned, it's obvious. I mean, you don't need hindsight to see that digital and online and getting your content online and downloading it, and you know, that is today. That has been today for a while now. And it's crazy that they didn't see that coming. I mean, okay, you could say, well, we see it coming, we don't really like it, but we have to adapt somehow and at least have a go at trying to adapt it and at least fighting the fight. But to just stand up and say, oh no, we don't want that, it's just sticking your head in the sand. It's like legacy industry. We don't want to adapt to the way the customer wants because it's not as much profit in it for us. We would rather force people to do it our way when they clearly don't want to.
Like I said, I can't get over this from my head. It sounds like actually the company was being run by somebody who wasn't tech savvy at all, which, you know, it baffles me. It really does. I just cannot get my head around how anybody, you know, I mean, maybe, okay, 15 years ago, if they had said, well, we don't want to go in that, and then, you know, 5 years ago saying, well, you know, I think it's time we started moving, even that would have been more acceptable. But we're talking 3 years ago here. We're not talking a long time ago. I mean, my first broadband connection was when 2001. It was 2001, it's the first time I had broadband. So, I mean, we're talking, it's 8 years after broadband was regular into homes. I mean, I wasn't really the first to get broadband. I had to kind of wait until I could afford it because it was quite pricey, first of all. So we're talking about 8 years after it was the norm in homes. And this person, and that's it, I mean, Xbox Live and all that must have been out by then. I mean, how could they be that blinkered to say, okay, the consoles are all doing it now, PC gamers are doing it. I mean, Steam must have been well set up even by then. How could anybody be so blind as to think, no, this is just a passing fad, people are going to want to come in? I mean, not even with the just the case of the download, but even if you want to think about it from the, what, you know, going green has been very, very much on people's agendas recently, a lot more than there's been, you know. So you're talking, well, there's no physical printing there, there's no delivery, there's no, you know, CO2 miles, there's no packaging to dispose of, there's no trip to the actual shop to go get it, you know. So I just don't get the blinkeredness of this person at all. I mean, really, I would be personally, if I was a shareholder in Game, I would be going after her in the same way that Sir Fred Goodwin was stripped of his sir. It was Fred Goodwin, wasn't it? Yeah, the RBS guy. You know, I mean, it just seems it was just an utter disaster. I think I would be, if I was a shareholder, I would want to be going after this team for that, for being so short-sighted and making so many wrong decisions.
I mean, usually when it comes to legacy businesses, they don't want to risk anything that might just be a marginal case or a kind of an outside horse coming up on the side and sort of breaking through the norm. They don't want to risk that, especially if it cannibalises their current thing, and they're really resistant to adopt anything new. But there's two words here that you cannot ignore. You've got iTunes and Steam. Now, I've never used either, but as far as I'm aware, both iTunes and Steam are household names the world over. PC gamers, or Windows PC gamers, should I say, they love Steam. They use Steam. There might not be much of an alternative, I don't know, but Steam is a household name where it's a platform and people go and sign up with a credit card and whatever and download games and demos and add-ons for games and all that. It's a platform to get games onto their machine. And then iTunes, backed by Apple, created by Apple, where you can buy music, you can buy videos and whatever else they do, and have them syncing across to your different devices. They have both been major mainstream services for a long time now. They are major mainstream brands. They are, Apple certainly don't, they're not one of the richest are the most profitable companies on the planet with more cash than fucking God if they don't have a successful strategy. And that's what it is. That they've proven along with Steam that this is the present. This is what people are expecting. And even taking the whole in the App Store model as well, it's the same thing. People are now used to that, and that's nothing new. So for someone to sort of see these major mainstream things and still not get it, it's clueless, basically. It's like Frank Sidebottom running the company, you know. But the other, I mean, even not getting the future, or not getting the present even, it's not even the future, it's the present, about how people want to consume content, download TV shows to their, and stream them to their tablets and their phones and stuff. It's not just that. The other thing they had, when they tried to get into the monopoly thing, the monopoly angle of we own all of the independent retailers or all game stores. You see plenty of examples of this where you've got like three game stores on the same street, and all of them are locked into long-term leases for the high street, and they're all kind of competing with each other, and you know, not, and all three of them are wasting money on long-term rents and rates, paying staff and paying insurance and all this. So they're basically hemorrhaging money because they've got too many stores, basically.
The one thing that, you made a good point there, but the one thing I've just thought about is, you know, people do want the physical. This is one, and you talk about iTunes as well. I don't know why, but it's the one area where the music is an advantage over gaming. With music, people do still like to have physical. I mean, I must admit, I love to get a CD, buy a CD off a band and support them. Or as recently, actually, I bought an LP. But gaming's never had that, not as far as to my knowledge. Okay, you will get some people. I mean, I remember back in the days of the big box games. I mean, those boxes came out. They were like two VCR videos put together, not videotapes put together. They were huge. And you did get some people who, when they released them as a DVD style covers, they were saying, oh no, I like the big box games. You did get some people like that, but overall the gaming industry does not get people with that kind of nostalgic thing with it going. I mean, you still do get an awful lot of people, like I said, buying the physical versions of music, but that has never ever translated to gaming. Not 100% sure why, but maybe it's just that gamers just adapt quicker, maybe just with them being probably more in the lines of cutting edge technology, maybe we just don't have nostalgia. Maybe nostalgia to us maybe might be downloading the ROMs and the emulator for the Atari 2600. I'm not 100% sure, but that is one place where gaming does not work. So I mean, yes, you could say, well, why do we still have music stores? But I think they are feasible, they do work. And as you can see now on the high street, well, not maybe not the high street, but certainly off the side streets, there are more and more independent kind of record, I mean, when I say record, I mean LP shops springing up. I don't think we're ever going to get that, sadly, with the gaming industry at all. I mean, I remember back when I started gaming, and when I first started gaming, it was the old Sinclair Spectrum. I used to love going to the gaming shops and used to see wall-to-wall tapes. Most of them would screech for 15 minutes and then crash, and then you'd have to rewind them and play them again. But that's not the point. They were still. Sadly, I do see that the traditional computer gaming store, especially the independent, I always like the independent ones, that is a dying breed now, sadly. I don't think we're going to see them about for much longer because of, well, I mean, obviously there is a reason for it, because the likes of Steam, online gaming, I mean, you look at one of the most popular games for the current market just now is Minecraft. There is no physical copy of it, not a legal one anyway, as far as I know.
Now, well, first off there, I had a point, and then I'll come back to that, but on the second thing you were talking about the independence, actually, I don't know if you could really call game independent, to be honest. It is a chain store. They've got so many stores all across the length and breadth of the country. that they are a chain store and they're not independent, really.
No, no, I was actually talking though about the independent gaming stores, as in, remember those wee computer shops? They might have been called, well, there was, what, I think there was two here called this, the Store and Wee Computer Shop. And there was one I used to visit in Inverness, just used to be across from the back door of the Cali Hotel, and it was called the Inverness Computer Shop. That's the kind of ones I'm talking about. Those ones, these level. No, no, I do, I agree with you there totally. Game itself, it was a chain, and it was a blooming big chain.
I know. I mean, to be honest, that what, the two shops you were talking about there were part of the chain. No, I'm kidding. no, I know what you mean. I'm just saying that I think we've probably wrongly been, I think, talking about game as independent. I just thought I'd mention that. But the thing is, there's always going to be a place for truly independent sellers of things like games and books and movies and audio and all of that. Question is whether it can survive as a physical thing or not, or whether it really would need to be online. Because the one thing that the big stores, as I said earlier, the one thing they can't do is offer a wide selection of stuff. I mean, you go into an HMV store and you're looking for some artist's back catalogue and you see some album that was out in 1974 and it kind of didn't sell that well, and it's almost been on the brink of being deleted off the catalogue, but they've still got like two copies, sort of thing. There's always that niche, and there's always the value in the staff there having knowledge of that, and being able to say, oh, we've got a almost like a collector's thing. There's always going to be a value in that, but whether it's going to be value or profitable as a physical store is another case. Likely not. So these independents, there's always value in that. But back to what I originally was going to say at this bit was, people are buying something that's different from what's on sale. When companies sell, I mean, say it's EA Games, when they sell, say, FIFA, they're selling it as they're telling you, oh, the value is in this game, you know, in this disc and in this box, and you've got the inlay booklet and stuff like that with all the moves and stuff like that. That's not what people buy. People buy something to put in their machine and get their controller in their hand, and the value is in the experience they have by looking at the screen and pressing the buttons and getting scoring goals and setting up goals and stuff like that. And most games, if not all games now, you have training levels where it says, if it's like a first-person shooter, you know, press square to duck. And so you've got in-game training, and a lot of people are familiar pretty much with different genres of games anyway. So you can jump into a football game and, okay, the pass and the shoot button might be swapped around about, but it doesn't take you that long to figure that one out. And you kind of learn on the go. And, I mean, but the point is, you don't pick up when you buy a game, when was the last time you bought a game and said, right, I better read the instructions first? You don't do that. You just put the thing in the machine, you switch it on, get the controller in your hand, and you play. So there's little to no value in the medium, the physical medium, the disc and the inlay card in the box, other than to keep it safe and unscratched on a shelf. It's the same with a movie. If you buy a Blu-ray or a DVD, you don't get any value from the physical disc. You put the disc in the machine and you've got your remote to press the button and have that movie or that TV show play whenever you want to watch it. And you've got the value is in the extras, where you can watch them and see how things were made and influences and things like that, and put on director's commentaries. And that's where the value is. It's not in the physical product. You happen to be buying a physical product, but you can easily download that, as long as the actual quality is the same as what you see on the screen and all the buttons work the same way. It doesn't matter whether that came from a download on your hard drive or whether it came from a disc that you put in a machine. The medium is irrelevant.
Yeah, I suppose the one The only way where you say the medium would be irrelevant would be maybe with slightly older users, but this isn't really that much of a gaming issue, to be honest. You know, I mean, maybe they might not be trusting so much as far as, you know, I want to see, if I've paid good money for it, I want my physical copy. But realistically, that has got to be a dying breed. And the other thing is, you'd have to be a pretty old gamer to be of that mentality. And I suppose maybe that's one of the reasons why bookshops are still, you know, they're still fairly regular. Obviously, a lot of older people still read, you know, but not so much older people. I can't imagine that many older people will be signing up for the new consoles from Sony and Nintendo. You know, but it's just one of those things. But yeah, there's absolutely, as far as I can see, that there is almost no benefit these days in doing something like in having the likes of a gaming shop. Why? Well, for a start, you've actually got to employ people to work there. You've got to pay your rates. You've got to pay your rent. You know, you've got to have, I mean, you've got to cover not just enough to make money on the game that you bought. You've then also got to make enough money so that you cover all these other things. Now, on top of that, yes, you do have the advantage that you do get someone you're speaking to when you go in, and it is local. Well, as far as geographically, it could be local. It might be part of a huge chain. But I just don't get where the comparison is for, like, when you can buy it online, where, as you said, buy it online, it's maybe 15 quid cheaper. You also get constant updates. You know, if there's an update, if there's updates version 1.5, whatever, if you have bought that, chances are you'll get it downloaded. If you buy it in store and then there's an update comes up for it, you've probably got to go and buy the blim thing all over again. You know, they're certainly not going to send it out for free. So, to be honest, it really is stacked against them. And this is what I think, you know, gaming, apart from maybe a small corner and maybe HMV, I think you're always going to have something, some physical, because there's plain and simply too many places where the broadband still isn't reaching very well. I mean, I still know people. There are certain parts, even on the island here. I mean, I get a great connection for the island. I'm about 7.5 meg, my connection. But yet I know people that are outside of the area. They can't connect to broadband at all, so they use satellite. And the maximum speed they'll get's 1 MB. You know, so realistically, and they're also very much limited in how much they can download. So realistically, it's not an option to download games. You are still going to get those, but the more and more time goes on, the more and more things are upgraded, the more and more it's just going to become a niche. I mean, to be honest, there's probably not that many consoles now that people have that aren't connected to the internet, that aren't getting these updates, that aren't playing with their mates online rather than physically getting the disc and then phoning up their mates and saying, oh, right, do you want to come around and play this game? No, instead they'll say, right, you know, You fancy going for a game online? Yep, give me 2 minutes till I log on. And that's just the way of the world. And we have to move with it if we're in the industry. You can't just simply say, I'm putting my head in the sand and do absolutely nothing. Instead, we're going to have to be saying, right, we've got to move with it or we're going to die. And sadly, the latter has happened. Now, again, it's no loss to me. But at the same time, we've got to think, we can't just be that blinkered and say, tough, it's no loss, it's not our loss, tough. We are going to, you know, there is a lot of people employed by game. It was a big franchise. So, but they didn't move with the times, and they're paying the price for it now.
I mean, there's all sorts of advantages and disadvantages for a bricks and mortar as well as an online thing. I mean, some companies can do it where they have some sort of combination thing, whereby you can reserve it online, or you can even buy it online and go and pick it up in store. There's people who go in store to actually, I mean, I do this when I'm looking at things and things in like Comet and Currys. I'll check them out online and I sort of narrow them down and then go into the store and actually see them in the flesh, so to speak. And assuming there's no price difference between that and online, I might not even buy them there. I might buy them at Amazon. So there's that. I mean, if you're only online, then you miss out on that. And some people as well, is because there's all sorts of companies claiming like first sale rights, whereby you cannot transfer the thing that you supposedly, quote, bought, unquote. If you don't have the physical copy, you can't do anything about that. I mean, if you go and buy a physical book, you can do whatever the fuck you want with that. You can give it to your mom, your dad, your son, your daughter, whoever. You can sell it. You can give it to a charity shop. It's a physical item that changes ownership. If you've got an ebook, well, that's different. You know, there may well be limits on that through DRM. Or if you lose a copy of it, if you lose your computer or something, do you have to go and buy it again? Are you allowed to make a backup? So there's that. But yeah, I mean, there is the idea of the sort of blend on and offline is some companies are adapting to that, others aren't. But to avoid the whole online thing altogether is just insane. As far as the updates are concerned, you're right. I mean, if you get something that's, if you go and buy it online, you will get the latest version. Might have bug fixes or something like that. But that's just the way it is, I suppose. I mean, the other thing that went against game as well was they had pissed off publishers by their pre-owned stuff. And that because, again, the first sale things is that when they sell pre-owned, they don't have to give any of that money to the publishers because the publishers already made their profit on the first sale. And in return, these bastions of free culture, publishers decided to retaliate by doing things like refusing to supply AAA titles when they came out. A lot of these big AAA stuff is like movies. The real value to the retailer comes in the initial week of release. That's when most people who want it and who are willing to pay full price for it are going to buy it. And if they're not supplied with it, they can't buy it there. So they're going to lose out there as well. So, yeah, that's one thing that's also counting against them.
Yes, it is. All right, then, are we about ready to wrap this up? I'm just noticing the times are ticking on. Did we get any more suggestions?
Yeah, from Phil, the Beardy Gnome, who had asked about companies that sell Linux or sell PCs without Windows, sorry, to avoid the Windows tax. He's mentioned a company called Cougar Extreme who do that. They're near him. So onto that, I've been doing a bit of thinking on how the site is going and how it can be improved and how easy to do things, basically. And what we used to have was separate sections for recommended links to sites like TechDirt and all that. Stuff for media, for like podcasts and things, events like FOSDEM or whatever. And I wanted to do all that in a fancy way with sortable lists and all that. And that's been a waste of time, essentially. So what I've decided to do is actually set it up instead. I've removed all of that and set it up as a wiki. So I've now got a wiki button. It's Drupal's own internal wiki. It's quite limited, but it's functional. And we're using that now for lists of things like how to avoid the Windows tax, companies you can support, and Phil's list is on there. We're going to have that for suggestions for topics for Crimmins as well. If you've got topics you want to suggest, it does mean that you need to get an account with the Drupal side, which is the main Unseen Studio site, to do that and add your own stuff there. The other question is, the forums are small. It's a separate program. It's Flux BB. And my thinking is, given the fact that it's that small and we're shoving most things across onto the wiki anyway, and then the feedback for individual episodes can go in the comments sections for those episodes, is there any point in having a forum? That's the question. Is there any point in having a forum? My instincts are no, it's not. But, you know, that's a question we're putting out there. If anyone has a compelling reason to keep the forum as it is, or just to do away with it, then either side of that debate, just please let us know, and we'll when you think about it. So yeah, I think that's it for that discussion.
The main thing is, I mean, if you're feeling no, we really do like the forums, then you know, let us know with that, because we don't want to be enraging our listeners. At the same time, though, if you do really want to keep the forums, I would really recommend you try and get us, any of your mates who listen to this, you know, whether they're real-life mates or virtual mates, doesn't matter, get them signing up. And as long as they don't basically, their username is not the same as one of Wee Guy's Dents, then we're probably going to be quite happy to assist them. However, if your spammers would rather not just close the forums, but would rather close them on top of you. So, well, if we're going to flip the birdie to any spammers that are about here.
I think what had happened actually was, it was more that when I was thinking about different angles for the site, I wasn't aware of existing services that already did that. One, initially I'd wanted to do lugs to list people's Linux user groups. And then I realised when I was building the site that there's already a site that specialises in that, and they do it so much better as their main thing than we could ever do as a little side thing. So we thought, right, not going to duplicate that, we'll go with that. And then I found that there's also one for events, which again is much the same thing. I think it's FOSS events, I believe. And again, that's their whole shtick, and they do it so much better. So it's all these little things are building up, and I sort of decided, look, there's no point in having these bits of deadwood on the site, you know, if there are other places that are better for them. So yeah, I want to wrap this up then, wrap this episode up.
Yeah, we're getting there. Just one last thing I'd like to ask about is just if anybody has an idea for a show, or if maybe they're thinking they'd like to actually start recording, and it's roughly along our kind of guidelines, which is just basically that it's a free and open source, so really all we're really looking for, then just send an email to the show. So that is crivens@unseenstudio.co.uk. And if you want to have a wee discuss about if you fancy becoming part of the Unseen Studios podcast network, then you are more than welcome. We're hopefully going to keep this expanding out as well. You can follow us on Identica. I am at Kevy, and Gordon is at Thistleweb. We also have one for announcing the shows, and that is at Unseen Studio. And I'm pretty much thinking that's us. Is anything else I've forgotten?
Yeah, that's it. We're also looking for little surreal intro audio clips. If you've got something bizarre with the word Crivens in it, just a little 30-second clip, audio clip, then please send it in. crivens@unseenstudio.co.uk. And yeah, that's it. So I want to find the song for the end of the show.
Yes, and this is... Actually, no, I couldn't pronounce this band's name, and it's to do with, like you thought it was to do with Harry Potter, so I'm going to let you do it. You fire on.
Yeah, I had to try and get mumble to the front so that I could read it. The band is Deedless's Right Eye. The song is Dreamcatcher. So it's good night from me.
And it's adios from me.
Young master, and tell us something pretty that boy she dies. so please excuse me, I'm kind of new. Just show me the ropes and I will tie up you. The bit of chill that could freeze our tongue, so you could never tell me what the hell was wrong. I wanna kiss you, then break up, then make up, wash, rinse, repeat. And till your conscience is clean and you are able to see you love me. How many numbers can you count to in that pretty head? It's not often I get to talk this long and I intend. Eat up, you words, your master. The truth doesn't become you when your tongue is untied. Eat up, you words, your master. And tell her something pretty before she dies. Kerosene kisses couldn't be any more cold. Your kerosene kisses couldn't be any more. Your kerosene kisses couldn't be any more cold. Your kerosene kisses couldn't be any more. The truth doesn't become you when your tongue is untied. Eat up, you words, young master. And tell her something pretty before she dies. Cause I'm a dream catcher. I'll tell you fast, you run faster, faster.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.